Welcome to the Everyman Sports Podcast, the show for fans, by fans. No former pros, no so-called experts, just real passionate fans. From outside on a porch to inside a living room, in the parking lot of a stadium to the dining room table, friends and families chat about their teams, their games, and what makes them cheer. This is Everyman Sports.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Everyman Sports. My name is Chad. I'm the owner-operator of this podcast. The number is 626-427-7678. That number is, again, 626-427-7678. To call and be a part of the podcast, to leave your number and to leave any information you want and talk about the world of sports as well. I am on my own again this week. I am driving around and I thought I would talk a little bit about what's going on in the world of sports. You can also find us on Twitter, Everyman Sports, one word, at Everyman Sports on Twitter. And, of course, on Facebook as well, Everyman Sports. Please find us, like us, rate us, do anything you want, even badmouth us, and see what I care. But I wanted to talk about what's going on. Well, let's start with the playoffs in the NHL and the NBA. An exciting Game 7 for the Rangers and the Capitals. The Rangers come back 3-1. Second season in a row that they do that with their backs against the wall with the elimination likely for them. But they come back 3-1 over the Capitals. Alex Ovechkin had made the bold proclamation that he guaranteed a win. And I really wish I haven't found, or I don't think anybody has really put it out there, but I'd love to see a statistic about guaranteed wins. I mean, you famously remember the big guaranteed wins. You remember Joe Namath, of course, Super Bowl III against the Colts. Mark Messier in the Eastern Conference Finals in 94, just to name a couple. There have been some that, you know, but those are the ones you remember. It's the guaranteed ones that don't happen just during the NCAA tournament. In men's basketball, there was a 16 seed, I believe, who guaranteed a win over a 1 seed. That did not come true. And now Alex Ovechkin can join that roster as well. It wasn't for lack of him. Look, Alex Ovechkin, he scored the first goal of the game, one of the only points for the Capitals that game. He scored it, and, you know, so he did his job. But I think the problem with the Capitals and Ovechkin is that it's just him. I can come up with, and I'm sure many, many other people can come up with great, just like in basketball, you know, having a great number one is wonderful. And, you know, one person in basketball and hockey can take over the game and sort of dictate the play and really, you know, just have everybody hop on their backs and you know, take him to a win. But there, you've always got to have somebody else helping out. You know, in hockey, when you say Lemieux, you'll know Jágr as well. In basketball, it's Jordan and Pippen. You know, somebody like Sidney Crosby with somebody like Hossa. And then if you look at, I mean, you know, for the Red Wings for all those cup years, it was Yzerman. With if he was there, Sergei Fedorov, but also Nicholas Lindstrom in later years, Joe Sakic, Peter Forsberg, just name a few. Even though they didn't win a title, the Legion of Doom with the Flyers, Eric Lindros and John LeClair. I mean, that's just to name a few. So I don't feel that Ovechkin has that big number two that can really sort of pull their weight as well. Look, the Capitals are a very good team. And they have been for several years now. But there's something lacking, and they need to improve on something. And I think that what they need is they need a big number two to go along with Ovechkin. But it's hard to knock off the Rangers, who, you know, they won the President's Cup for most points, best record in hockey, number one seed in the East. And they showed just why they deserve all those accolades and why they went to the Cup last year. And right now they're looking like they're going to be going to the Cup this year. I know Game 1 has already been played between the Lightning and the Rangers for the Eastern Conference Finals. The Rangers won 2-1. And as recording this, they're about to play the second game as well. And over in the West, the Blackhawks and the Ducks. Ducks have only lost one game in the two rounds so far. They're 8-1 in the playoffs, which is very a little surprising. I think a lot of people didn't think the Ducks would make it this far and this dominant as well. Of those four teams, there are four possible matchups. I think the best matchup is Rangers-Blackhawks. Chicago versus New York. I think that two original six teams. I absolutely love when there are two original six teams in the Stanley Cup. And there's only a small percentage of that happening because now the Blackhawks are the only team in the Western Conference that's an original six team. All the other five are in the East. Very surprising. I really think that they should have left the Red Wings in the West, but I don't make the decisions. I just watch the games and comment on them. So I think that would be the best. I don't think people would want to see Anaheim, Tampa Bay. I'm sorry. I don't think so. For a national audience, that's not going to be a big one. Having the Rangers there is the key, having the New York market and having it go up against another Southern California team, you know, Anaheim, basically Los Angeles. You know, the Kings last year, Kings, Rangers, New York, LA, that was a big one. And I think New York, Anaheim, which is, you know, it gets thrown in with Los Angeles as well, would be just as good. But I think Chicago, New York is the way to go. Over in basketball, speaking of game sevens, the Clippers just lost their game seven. They had, speaking of up 3-1, they had the Rockets, who were the favorite in the series. They had them, you know, almost eliminated. The LA Clippers were up 3-1 over the Houston Rockets, and Houston fought back. Very surprising game six. The Clippers were leading going into the final minutes against the Houston, and a sizable lead. But somehow I think Houston went on a 19-0 run, got back into the game, and they won it. And it sent them back to Houston for a game seven where Houston pulled it off. L.A. was actually 3-0 in their last three game sevens, dating back for the last couple years. But sometimes that luck runs out for you. I would have liked to have seen the Clippers go farther, because I think Golden State versus L.A. could have been fun, a nice California series. But now you have Houston and Golden State, the Warriors and the Rockets. I think that'll be big. Curry is the MVP, facing off against Harden, the runner-up for the MVP, so that's going to be a marquee matchup right there. And I would like to see... I think Golden State going to the finals would be a great story. Don't forget the Warriors. These are the Golden State Warriors used to be the San Francisco Warriors. They also used to be the Hershey Warriors. I think Philadelphia and Syracuse, I believe. I could be wrong. But this is a franchise that was home to Wilt Chamberlain and his 100-point game. So I'd like to see them in the finals because they were bad for a very long time. And I think this would be good for the franchise and also for the NBA. And then in the East, the Atlanta Hawks, oh boy, did they... So they're facing the Wizards, and they had the Paul Pierce had a game-winning shot, I think game four or game five, last-second shot. And game six, the Hawks were leading, and then, of course, Washington, can't count them out as well. They had to they came back, and on the final buzzer, Paul Pierce made a shot to tie the game. It went in. But a video replay showed that his fingertips were still on the ball, which was an amazing play. I couldn't believe it. I don't think a lot of other people could really believe that Paul Pierce could do this more than once at a buzzer beater. I think he had done twice prior in the series. Definitely once, I think twice as well. But I also feel kind of bad for DC. I mean, the Capitals and the Wizards both go out in... exciting, but a sad fashion out of the playoffs. So, you know, be careful if you live in D.C. Watch out for people off the buildings, I guess. I don't know. Maybe they don't really care. I don't have my pulse on the D.C. sports life. I have a friend who's down there, and he said it only really matters with the Redskins. You know, football, baseball, basketball, that's nothing compared to if the Redskins were, you know, making a playoff run and then got booted. So now the Hawks, number one seed in the East, face off against the Cavaliers, number two seed in the East. LeBron James and company, although damaged, Kyrie Irving is hurting. Of course, Kevin Love is out for the playoffs. So they're really having to rely on James, which I think is a great story because, you know, James can cement his I'm back with, you know, having everybody jump on his back. You know, talking about players that dominate and can control a game, James is that type of player, and this is his chance. It's not as if he's coming back to, you know, now we can really write the story of I came back to Cleveland. I'm not just a piece. I'm the reason. I'm, you know, that James is the reason why they're going this far in the playoffs and they're this good. So we'll see. I think Golden State versus Cleveland will be a really good story. That would be a really great finals to see. I brought up this point a while ago. Atlanta versus Golden State, both were the number one seeds. There was a stat that said, teams at the All-Star break that had over, I think it was 700 winning percentage, either 700 or 7, I think it was 700 winning percentage, and how they fare, or have shown up in the finals the last couple of years, at least one of them. And right now we have Golden State and Atlanta both in the running. They could both potentially be in the finals. But I think it's going to be Cleveland and Golden State. I've been wrong before, and I'm going to be wrong again in the future, but let's hope that this one comes true as well. We're going to go over to horse racing for a minute. On our last episode, I totally forgot about the Kentucky Derby, with American Pharoah winning the Kentucky Derby. I had thought Carpe Diem might have placed at least in one of the three. But they didn't. He did not. Carpe Diem did not. So American Pharoah won the Kentucky Derby and won the Preakness, a very muddy Preakness. And of course, on Twitter, the jokes of Seinfeld and his mother was a mother, his father was a mother, all that stuff. Which pop culture, it seeps its way into sports. It's always great when you see that. So American Pharoah is one jewel away from the Triple Crown. Needs the Belmont in a couple weeks to do that. The Test of Champions, the very long track. I always want to see. I think people want to see a Triple Crown, I don't think you should change really anything. Don't make it easier if you want to win the Triple Crown. Because who is it? California Chrome, or last year the previous? I believe it was California Chrome. That his owner was just up in arms. You know, some of the owners were withholding their horses from the Preakness to rest up for the Belmont. So I think that if you run the Kentucky Derby, you also need to run in the Preakness, or you run in the Belmont, or you just don't get a chance to come back in, to slide back in. I'll say that more so than, you know, I don't think you should rest the horses as opposed to changing the schedule or changing the feat. You know, if you're a part of it, then you're a part of it. You know, if you think about the in the Olympics, like the decathlon, you know, it's the decathlon. There are 10 events. Do you only get to do 7 of them if you feel tired? You know, and have that count towards it? Yeah, you can, you know, not place in something, or maybe you're injured, but I don't think in that case you can necessarily say, oh, I'm just going to sit out these 5 events and then I'm going to come in for the last 5 events and hopefully screw up somebody else's points. No, that's not really how it works, and I don't think that's how it should work. If you're a part of the Kentucky Derby, you should also be a part of the Preakness, and then you should also be a part of the Belmont, but you shouldn't be able to say, I'm going to sit out the Preakness, wait for the Belmont. No. We can get somebody else for that. That's what I think. I'm sure other people don't agree with that, and I don't blame you, but that's the only thing I can think of that you could possibly change, because you're not going to change the track, you're not going to change the length of the track, or how far they have to run, and you're not going to change the date, you're not going to move it back or move it up. So forget that, and just worry about who's in the field. I'll say that much. Moving over to football for a minute, Deflategate has got its ruling. Of course, we were talking about four games for Tom Brady and also $1 million, which is a drop in the bucket for a billion-dollar franchise and Robert Kraft. It just means he can't buy those French cuffed dress shirts and those a new pinstripe suit for himself. So woe is he. And loss of two draft picks, a 2016 first-rounder and a 2017 fourth-rounder, I believe, fourth or fifth. I was very surprised that they got hammered that much. But I think, look, they took into account Spygate. And I'll say this. If the Saints, under Sean Payton, or even after Sean Payton, get hit with another scandal, I think it should be the same thing. I think harsher penalties for repeat offenders. Not repeat offenders in... Because you're very rarely going to catch somebody twice for the same crime. Or you're not going to say... If they get hit once with something, they're not going to, you know, test the waters again. They're going to, okay, this was bad. But if something happens to your franchise again under the same regime, okay, you know, really hammer them. You know, take away what you need to. Let them know, look, you screwed up once. You made the mistake. You didn't learn from it. You decided to keep on playing with fast and loose with the rules. And this is what you get. I do not buy for a second that Tom Brady had no knowledge of it. Now, again, I talked about the language. It's very soft, you know, gentle language. He probably may have or may not have generally was aware that something was going on. Fine. You didn't have the evidence that pointed to him and say he knew. But common sense says he knew. He is the one who holds the ball every play. He touches that ball every play. There are different balls for kicking field goals and punting the ball and kickoffs. So aside from some sort of wildcat formation where it's a direct snap to the running back, he knew. He knew. And now it came out after the Wells report that the, you know, the two equipment guys, JJ and I forget the other guy's name, they were, you know, not suspended, but... I forget the verb, you know, the language used on what their punishment was, but they were excused. They weren't fired from the team, but they were basically said, all right, you got to go away for a while. And I forget if they're still getting paid or not. But now it comes out that in a rebuttal to the investigation, the Wells report, that in one of the text messages, one of them calls themselves the deflator, that's in reference to him losing weight. Which makes no sense at all that you would be using that specific term to... I mean, I really just... I don't buy that at all. I think that's rather silly, and I think it's ridiculous, and I think you're just insulting us as fans and us as human beings. I also would like to know, now that it's been deemed a joke, are they welcome back to the Patriots locker room? Are they back to their full-time jobs? Because that's the only way that this would be seen as honest. If they got their jobs back, if they were welcomed back and no penalties were given to them. But as I recall, they, you know, as of this recording, Monday, May 18th, as I recall, they're still not welcome back. They're still not back at, Foxborough Stadium and the practice field and where their headquarters are. So take that as a grain of salt. You know, think about that for a minute. And I have, you know, I don't see it as harsh to Tom Brady. And, you know, this punishment, you might say it, and Robert Kraft is vehemently denying any wrongdoing. And I mean, this is a guy who demanded an apology before the investigation was even finished from the NFL. I mean, look, you have to take Spygate into account for this. And you have to have the logical thinking of your quarterback, and these balls are blown to your specifications. Just like a pitcher who gets a baseball and they look at it, oh, there's scruffs on, oh, there's a cut in this. I don't like this baseball. Too dirty. Throw it back. The same thing happened with something like with Kenny Rogers back in 06 in the World Series, where there was something on the heel of his hand. It was obviously pine tar. It was obviously pine tar. And they actually had photographic evidence from previous games where on his heel of his hand, he had that. Now, this is, you know, looking at baseball for a minute, this pitchers have very specific routines. They cut their fingernails certain ways. I mean, they know what everything that's on their hands, if they want it there or not. And if they don't want it, they'll change it. If you want it there, they'll leave it. Same thing with football. If you don't like the way this ball is, you give it to somebody else. Or you put it back and say, this is not what I want. It's not what I want. And so, he knew. Tom Brady knew. I'm sorry, he did. As a Jet fan, I'm very happy to see him gone for 4 games. I don't think it's good. I mean, they're going to appeal it, but he's not going to come right back. I mean, there's still going to be suspensions. Fine, 2 games, fine. Even 1 game. But he's not going to get off scot-free. He's not starting the first game of the season. And in the court of public opinion, he's guilty. The franchise is guilty. They are going to be looked at negatively for all time. This is not once. This is twice. And yes, it was within the rules, but the play against the Ravens where they didn't identify the eligible man in that one play, yes, it was within the rules, but you obviously were trying to catch people off guard, and you were trying to you were being too smart. Fine, good for you. It didn't break the rule, but it gave the sense of unfair play. And I always go back to the fact that Belichick did not have a good stint as the Browns coach in the mid-90s. And I think that really affected him when he went back with Parcells. I think he was a man on a mission to never, ever, ever have to go back to a coordinator position, to never be under Parcells again. And I really honestly think that there is some sort of deep-rooted pain inside of him. Not pain, but like a drive, like this never-ending drive to show everybody that they will forget Cleveland and that they'll talk about Belichick over Parcells or something like that. I don't know. It's just because it's not just, oh, hey, this is my second stint and I tried to do something different. No, it's definitely, this is my second chance and I'm going to dominate this second chance. So we'll see what happens with the appeal. It's going to be a long summer. Moving over to baseball. The Houston Astros have been really turning it on. They've been doing some excellent, just surprising. Really, they lead the majors in, at this point in the season, home runs, stolen bases, and strikeouts. They're getting it done with pitching, and a lot of pitching in this league in baseball is really getting it done. That's why the Mets have been in first place for a while now, although that grip is very, very close to being released, and the Nationals are right behind. I think they're a half game behind as of this recording. So it's very exciting. The Yankees have been coming on strong. A lot of really good pitching has been going on. Bryce Harper has been absolutely on fire with several multi-home run games. MVP chance already starting in him. I'm a Bryce Harper fan. I like him. He's got a skill and a talent. I'd like to see him have a bat for a higher average. But now the power's starting to come in, and I think this is big. Now the Nationals really are his team. He's batting so high in the lineup now. I think this is Harper's year to really take control. So I'd like to see the Mets continue their winning ways if they can. They had one offensive outburst a couple of days ago against the Brewers, but that's pretty simple. You know, not to disparage the Brewers, but you know they've already gotten rid of their manager, so things have been going well for them. And speaking of new managers, the Miami Marlins, formerly the Florida Marlins, have fired their manager, Mike Redmond, after a 16-22 start where they thought that they basically bought a championship, which they've been doing these last several years, ever since they were in that new the new eyesore of a ballpark. Just free agents, trades, getting big names, and hoping to really cement themselves as a contender, but has not worked out well. I mean, they had a midseason fire sale with Reyes and Burley and Heath Bell a couple seasons ago, getting rid of Ozzie Guillen very early on in the season. They actually signed Mike Redmond to a contract extension in the offseason because of how well he did with the team the previous season in 2014. And now, after a slow start, a sluggish start, where they're in a competitive National League East, they're only, how many games under 500? They're 6 games under 500. 1 game out of the cellar above the Phillies. But it's still early in the season. They get rid of Mike Redmond, and they hire their GM. Their GM is going to go from the front office into the dugout, Dan Jennings. Dan Jennings was a head coach for a high school in Alabama 30 years ago. He's been part of the Marlins since 2002 in the front office as scouts and baseball operations, and he's been a GM these last couple seasons. And now he's the manager when they've got Brett Butler as their third base coach, who could be, who's going to likely be a manager soon. There's, you know, you could even bring back an old guy, you know, somebody like, bring back Ozzie Guillen. They're paying 2 managers already, Mike Redmond and Ozzie Guillen. But these are also the Marlins, and Jeffrey Loria, who's gotten rid of Joe Girardi after one season. By the way, he's already won, at least he's won one World Series with the Yankees so far. He got rid of Freddy Gonzalez, has been doing very well in Atlanta these last several seasons. There's so many other names out there, but I think it's because he doesn't want they. Don't, I think Loria's going, wow, now I don't want to. I'm fine paying 2 managers. I don't want to pay 3, because that's what he'd be doing. So, from my understanding, Dan Jennings is going to have his same salary as a GM, and he's just going to have a new duty, which is his manager. He's going to be manager. He's not going to be the GM. The assistant GM is going to be there, and accordingly, after the season, Dan Jennings will be allowed to go back to his GM position, which honestly, I don't believe that's going to happen unless they somehow go to the World Series. If they just, they don't contend for the rest of the season, they stay under 500. No, he's going to let him go. Cause don't forget, he's the manager, but he's also the GM. He signed these guys to these contracts. He made these deals these last couple seasons. So that team on the field is his, not just as a manager, but also as a GM. So honestly, if they don't contend, if they don't do well this season, according to Jeffrey Loria, he's gone. Dan Jennings is gone, which is a shame. Apparently, he's a really good baseball guy, pretty much a genius, a baseball genius in the franchise. And so I don't understand why. I mean, this is typical Marlins. I mean, really, they're just outrageous, and they do the silliest stuff. But I don't mind because I'm a Met fan. But Jeffrey Loria needs to go. You know, the courts were. You look at around now, and you see a lot of the owners who are basically running franchises into the ground. They find ways of getting rid of these owners. The McCourts with the Dodgers. I honestly forget the owner of the Clippers who with his scandal, but they got him out as well. I think it's Loria's turn. I mean, he put the taxpayers of Miami-Dade County on the hook for a giant stadium which looks hideous inside and just has run the franchise honestly, into the ground. He fell into a world championship. He really did. And don't forget, this franchise has won 2 World Series. The first time they did it, they bought a World Series. They spent a lot of money in free agency. They got very good free agents who just meshed at the right time. But I still think the Indians should have won that World Series, and I'll never forget that. But still, they won a World Series. And then in 2003, again, they had really good pieces. Josh Beckett, Miguel Cabrera, Dontrell Willis at the time. They made a change mid-season, or early in the season, I should say. Got rid of Jeff Torborg, brought in Jack McKeon, and it worked out perfectly. Lightning's not going to strike that many times. Just because you get rid of the manager early in the season because you think this team should be performing better does not mean they are going to succeed. And there's a difference between trader Jack McKeon, who was an excellent GM and was an excellent manager for the Padres, and Dan Jennings, who is a good GM, a very good baseball guy with no Major League Baseball experience on the field. But I think it'll be really interesting to see. So thank you again very much for joining me on this episode of Everyman Sports. Our phone number again is 626-427-7678. That's 626-427-7678. You can find us on Twitter, Everyman Sports. You can also find us in other places, which my friend Andrew is going to tell you about. Andrew, take it away.
This has been another episode of Everyman Sports. The show's music is Cold Funk by Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under CC Attribution 3.0. Everyman Sports can be found on Facebook.com, where you can like it to receive updates and news. Visit Everyman Sports in the iTunes Store to leave a review of the show. Also, visit everymansports.podbean.com directly to comment and support. Everyman Sports can be contacted directly at everymansports@gmail.com.